Making the Turn with Peter Kessler on the PGA Tour Network, Sirius 209, XM 146. Presented by the Jim McLean Golf School, the number one rated golf school in America. Now from Orlando, Florida, here's Peter Kessler.
Good morning, I'm Peter Kessler. Back in the 1970s, you could join La Costa Country Club in San Diego, great golf course where they used to play the Tournament of Champions, win an event, you'd play in the Tournament of Champions. You could join for $500, and the dues were $12.50 a month. And I remember that because I used to ask why they couldn't be $12 even. Now, one day I hear that Lanny Watkins is coming to play La Costa in an outing. I mean, Lanny Watkins, the U.S. amateur champion, he had just turned professional. So he comes out, I walk every hole, he makes 9 birdies, he makes 9 pars. He sets the record of 63, never saw the golf course before, fired at every single flag with a great player's arrogance, so self-assured with a full release of every shot, almost daring the ball not to behave. And it kind of reminded me of what a gunslinger might have been like in the days of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Well, now, the Sundance Kid later this year is going to be 60, so I'm figuring he's probably already shooting 59, firing at every flag, and the first player to shoot 59, who is 59. Lanny Watkins is a World Golf Hall of Famer, a former PGA Player of the Year, captain U.S. Ryder Cup team, 8-time member U.S. Ryder Cup team, member U.S. Walker Cup team, one of the best players of his time, 21 wins, 1 major. Morning, Lanny, so they finally let you in, huh?
Well, good morning, Peter. Yeah. Well, it's been a nice ride, though. I've enjoyed it, and it's been exciting for me and my family. And I think I've gotten as big a kick out of watching how much my friends and family have enjoyed it as anything. It really is kind of neat.
Has it been difficult because you would have figured you would have been in earlier, and not every voter was deeply in love with you, which delayed your entry, and so there must have been a kind of a gnawing, growing thing among family and friends of, well, when is it his turn?
Well, it probably was. I remember when Tucker, who's 16 now, when he was 12, I think, B.J. Singh was elected to the Hall of Fame. And Tucker is one of these, he's a golf nut and loves to play, as does my older son, Travis. And he came down to breakfast one morning. He'd already seen the Golf Channel. And he said, Dad, they finally put somebody in the Hall of Fame that's won more than you have. B.J. Singh got in. So, I figured it. If he could figure it out at 12 years old, then somebody was missing something somewhere.
Hey, Lanny, when you were younger, not everybody was in love with you, as I mentioned. And now everybody says you're a kinder, gentler Lanny. Is that true?
Well, I'm 59 years old, and I'm a grandfather of 3, so I probably am. I'm pop to 3 little kids, and I have a lot of fun playing with them, and do I wish I'd done some things differently when I was younger? Probably. If I had some things to do over again, I would definitely do them differently. But, when you're playing and you grew up as kind of tough as I did, I mean, my dad was a truck driver. My mother was a school teacher. We kind of fought and scrapped for everything we had between my brother and I. And, this was my way out, so to speak, was playing golf. So I was fighting tooth and nail for it. And that's just what I did, was I fought for it. And, I was tough, yes. Was I brusque at times with some of the press? Yes, especially when they asked stupid questions. So I probably was. But at the same time, I didn't have any trouble sleeping at night.
I remember, and I wonder if anybody's asked you this lately, but I remember when you and Sam Snead, played in the CBS Golf Classic. And what I remember about it was, and I tried to research and it was really difficult, but I remember you shooting kind of 63-ish and that Sam was around 66 and shot 66 and you're firing at every flag and making every putt and he's giving you a look like, where did this guy come from? Who are these guys? I think I just lost Lanny. I had that unsensational sound of uh-oh. So we will try to get him back. So I'll tell you what, let me do a little housekeeping with you, which we were going to do a little later in the show. As you know, we've been talking a lot about this opportunity to order roses for Mom, which extends through Friday. $19.99 for a dozen. Another $10, you get her a box of chocolate truffles. You can log on to proflowers.com. There's a microphone up in the right corner. If you click on that and put in my last name, they'll let you send the roses for $19.99. If you call 1-800-PRO-FLOWERS, you can use my name. I was thinking about it yesterday. Where can anybody drop my name and have it work out well? Well, through this Friday, you can with proflowers.com or 1-800-PRO-FLOWERS. Again, $19.99, dozen roses for mom. Yesterday, I talked about the Jim McClain Golf School, the Summer Junior Elite School. And it reminds me, having, you know, Lanny on the show, that Lanny started to play as a kid, had the opportunity, even though his parents weren't wealthy, but Lanny used to make sure that he played, and he played more than he practiced. And I think we've got him back now. You believe that as a philosophy, Lanny, don't you? Play more than you practice.
Oh, I do. Peter, no question. I believe playing is better than practicing. One of the things with my oldest son when he went to college was, Wake Forest plays a terrific golf course called Old Town Club. It's a Perry Maxwell course right next to the campus. And I just insisted that Travis go up there and play a lot of golf, play holes. When I was a kid, if we hit balls, we had to pick them up. And so that didn't last very long. So I hit balls maybe once a week, and Bobby and I would play 36, 54 a day. And that's, I think, the difference between my boys and myself now. At their ages, I'd probably played, 300 to 500 more rounds of golf than they've played, but they've hit a lot more balls.
You know, speaking of hitting a lot of balls, maybe nobody hit more than Sam Snead, who I brought up just before we unfortunately lost you for a minute. And I was referencing that CBS Golf Classic. What do you remember about that day, if I'm not going back too far?
The thing I do remember is it was the first round match the second year. And what I was saying is that I've actually got the tapes of those the last two. Jerry Hurd and I won the last one that was a team event. And then the last one was an individual thing. And I played Sam and Gabe Brewer in the first round set of matches. And Gabe Brewer shot 69 and won no skins. It was also a skins format as well. Sam shot 66, won one skin, and I shot 63 and won 17. And he called me a flippy-wristed college kid for the next 6 weeks, I think.
Well, you know, in those days, everybody used to try to copy his swing. I'm wondering if for 5 minutes he tried to copy yours.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Sam was that. Mine was a little quick for his taste, and I didn't have the Harley-Davidson grip that he gave a lot of people a lot of heat for, but Sam was always my idol growing up. I mean, I was a Virginia boy, and Sam being from Hot Springs, literally he was my favorite player growing up. So for me to get the opportunity to play with him, it was really cool. And I think that's one of the great things about golf is you get to play with your heroes. You know, if you grow up a baseball player, you didn't get to play baseball with Mickey Mantle, but you get to play golf with Sam Snead, and I've played with, Snead, Hogan, Sarazen, Jackie Burke, right on down the line. So, Trevino, Palmer, Player, all of them. So that's been really neat.
Somebody said to me, shouldn't Lanny have won like twice as many tournaments? And I said, well, why don't you play with Jack and Gary and Johnny and Lee and Tom and Ben, and the list goes on and on. To win 21 and one major at that time, not such a thing to be taken lightly, given how hard it had to have been to win golf tournaments then.
It was. You felt like that everybody out there was very capable of winning, and we had guys that were, prolific winners, like you've mentioned. And I think especially when you look at the number of majors that have been won by that group of guys that you mentioned, and you didn't even mention guys like Hale Irwin or Raymond Floyd or and then on into, Crenshaw and Kite and Watt, we did mention Watson, but those were guys that, I played a lot of golf against and was on Ryder Cup teams with. And, it was a neat time. I really think we had a great bunch of characters and, terrific players when I was out there. And it wasn't the cookie cutter type golfers. These guys had imagination. The Seve Ballesteros of the world and, Watsons. It wasn't all right there on the drawing board. They played golf.
Lanny, what was it like when you and Tom Watson went and stayed in the Crow's Nest for amateurs at Augusta National that first time?
Well, it was interesting. It was 1970. We were both amateurs, and we were up there, and The one thing I remember of the experience was that watching scream bloody murder in his sleep all night long every night, so I didn't sleep very well. And I told him, I said, I don't know what you boys are doing in Stanford, but we haven't discovered that stuff at Wake Forest yet. So, Tom was kind of a wild child back then, but we got along great. We've been friends for, as long as I can remember, and stayed in the Crow's Nest Inn. Then we were in the same qualifying school. And then later on down the road, about 1974, I loaned him a driver, and he actually won 8 majors with my spare driver. So...
Well, that's 8 out of 8. Yeah, that's all of them.
Yeah, that's all of them. He won all of them with my spare. But I actually, back then, he had to pay for them. I paid $100 for that driver. He never even gave me the 100.
Well, you still got his phone number.
Yeah. But, Tom can be a little frugal at times.
Didn't you used to have to chase Arnold into the men's room to collect? Lanny, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, sorry, Peter, didn't hear you.
That's right. I was just saying, didn't you have to chase Arnold sometimes to collect?
Well, Arnold wasn't the fastest payer in the world. I mean, we always had a saying, fast pay makes fast friends. And there was one time it took him about 3 months to, come over with some Tuesday winnings. But we had a great time. More than anything else, we never played for big dollars. I mean, it was $20, maybe automatic one downs or something. And, it was more back then than it is now, but it was the camaraderie of it. I mean, we spent 4 or 5 hours out there needling each other, as well as playing some good golf. And I mean, there were one time we even played 36 holes on a practice day at Hilton Head on Tuesday. I mean, we just kept going. So I mean, it's the kind of thing you don't see now. And I would think watching that kind of stuff would almost be more enjoyable than watching a tournament.
Because we could hear as long as you guys were mic'd up. We it's funny.
Yeah, well, you could get pretty close to us back then, and it was pretty good. So everybody was having a good time.
We're talking with Lanny Watkins. I once asked Arnold, Lanny, what did his style, which is very similar to what your style has been, what did his style of play cost him ultimately in tournaments and majors? And he said, well, you got to turn it on its head and say, what did my style gain me? It gained me all my majors. It gained me all of my wins. Sometimes I might have lost by using that same philosophy, but what other philosophy would you have me use? Do you feel the same way?
No question, Peter. Yeah, I think that for the most part, I was a very good front runner. I always set goals when I was leading. One of my main goals was if I'm leading the golf tournament by 2 shots or more, then my goal the last round was not to have a 5 on my card. I actually did that a couple of times leading and ended up, so I did things that would help me increase my lead. And at the same time, I won from 6 behind, 5 behind several times, 3 behind. So, and I think the fact that I was, going after it in under tough conditions and then pulled it off. Some of the best rounds I ever played were final rounds in really nasty conditions. I mean, one year I was at the Hawaiian Open, I was 6 back going the final round and won by 4. Because it was so windy, and I think I was the only person in the last 30 to break 70, and I shot 65. So, when you go after enough, sometimes things do come together.
Lanny, sometimes people start to forget how great the great ones were, and sometimes people of today don't have...
I'm sorry, Peter, I can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now, Lanny? Okay, we're going to let Lanny go. We'll get him on another day. Lanny, you still there?
Yeah, Peter, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry you're going in. I apologize. I'm on my cell phone driving, so it's where I am this morning, so sorry about that.
That's okay. We're just delighted that you would take time to be with us today. We mentioned, and you mentioned just as many or more guys I did at your time who were great players. And what I was suggesting was that people today may not be aware of how great those great ones were. Let me pick a name of somebody who's just quietly left the scene, and that's Lee Trevino. How great was Lee?
Oh, Lee was unbelievable. I mean, he won, 6, 7, 8 majors, and he had more imagination probably than anybody that's ever played the game. he would find a way to do it. He was not afraid of anybody. I mean, evidence him beating Jack in the playoff at Marion for a U.S. Open in 71. I was fortunate enough. I actually went head-to-head with Lee twice in big-time tournaments the last couple of days. Yeah, me on one, I got him on the other. When I won the Players 30 years ago, this week actually, or whenever it was 30 years ago, I went the last two rounds, you know, with Lee in my group. And then he beat me in 84 for the PGA Championship at Joel Creek. We were in the same group the last 2 days. So just a great competitor. I always loved playing with Lee. I mean, I enjoyed the guys who, you know, were themselves. And what you saw from Lee is just who he is every day of the week.
I remember that final round at Shoal Creek. That's when he made every single putt, including the last hole, and kissed his putter, right?
Oh, yeah, he did. In fact, I mean, it was the painting done, turning point. I was one back on 16, and I actually had about a 12-footer for birdie. He had a 15-footer for par. I mean, it could be a two-shot swing. He made the par putt. I missed the birdie putt, and, you know, he ended up, you know, birdieing 18 and, you know, winning easily. So, but that point was a big one, because I just made a couple of birdies to get right back against him, even though I'd had the lead with nine to play.
You know, again, we mentioned so many great players, but yet at the end of the day, Jack is head and shoulders above everybody in terms of record. What was it about his actual play, aside from the heart, aside from his ability to keep doing what he did longer than anybody else? What was it tee to green and on the green that set him apart?
Well, I think just his determination and his belief in himself. I mean, he obviously was an unbelievable player. If there was anything that lacked in his game in his prime, it was probably his short game. I mean, his game around the greens, his pitching and his bunker play was not the best. He was always an unbelievable putter. And, you know, people today say Tiger Woods is probably the best putter ever, and I still defer to Nicklaus, because he made the same kind of putts that Tiger makes, and he made them on greens that were a lot worse. And, I mean, he would just will the ball in the hole. And it didn't matter whether it was right to left, left to right, you know, distance, whatever, speed, didn't make any difference. I mean, if it had to be made, you know, Jack was going to make it, and that was just it. I think his determination, and he never made a mental mistake. He always played smart. If you were going to beat him, you literally had to beat him. He was not going to beat himself.
Did you guys have any inkling that 30 years ago that the Players' Championship was going to become the biggest deal of any of the events that are put on by the PGA Tour?
I don't think so. No, I mean, when I won, I won a grand total of $63,000 first prize at Sawgrass, across the street from where they're playing now. I think I was the first person to ever break par over there. Like I said, I went head-to-head against Trevino, ended up winning by five over Tom Watson. But I don't think we envisioned it being, you know, what it is today. It has really grown and prospered and done very, very well at the stadium course, no question.
I don't think anybody's broken par since you broke par there.
I think actually the next year or so, the weather was better and some people did. The amazing thing was that I shot the thing I remember about that tournament was the wind was down the first two. Saturday I shot 76 and maintained a three-shot lead, and then shot 72 Sunday and won by five. So I shot 148 on the weekend and increased my lead, which that was some tough conditions.
Yeah, I remember when Watson did something like that one year at the Memorial. He shot 69 and looked like a hailstorm, and the next, you know, closest average score grouping was around 77.
I remember that round distinctly because I was leading after the first round. It was the second round, and I played right behind Tom the second round. I shot 79, and I don't know how the hell he shot 69. That was as tough a day as I've ever seen. That the wind wasn't blowing 40.
We're talking with Lanny Watkins. Last question for you, Lanny. Do you think for the World Golf Hall of Fame there should be a strict objective criteria, or is it okay that there's still a bit of a popularity contest involved in the voting?
Well, that's a tough call. I mean, here at some places, I'm not sure that I should be in a Hall of Fame with guys like, you know, Trevino and Watson and Nicklaus and Palmer and Player and Hogan and Snead. I mean, you know, that it's very exciting that I am, but at the same time, I just kind of wonder, you know, have I won enough to be in a Hall of Fame? And if that's the case, you know, what happens down the road with, I mean, obviously Tiger and Phil, but you look past them right now and, you know, do you see anybody else getting there? You know, so, I mean, maybe there should be criteria that, you know, guys know what they're pointing towards.
That's a very straightforward comment for you to make, to compare yourself with the guys of your time who had more successful records and wonder if you belonged in the same hall that they did. That's a generous comment on your part and one that tells us a lot about you. Lanny, it's so nice to be with you again. We haven't had a chat in a long time, and I'm so glad that you would spend the time, and I'm delighted for you about World Golf Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Peter. Nice being with you.
My great pleasure. Lanny Watkins, everybody, the newest member of the World Golf Hall of Fame. We'll be right back.